If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
I've been told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
It is all part of the show. John Pollock and Brandon Thurston coming at you on this Wednesday afternoon. As the U.S. government shuts down, Pollock and Thurston never stops.
No, we would no vacations here, at least for me. I don't take vacations. I don't do out of office emails. I'll be vacationing in Buffalo, New York this fall.
Yeah, Brandon has told me if I ever were to put an out of office email, I'd be fired.
That would be it.
Yeah, that would be it. On today's show, everyone, we're going to be talking about many topics. We're going to be joined by the returning Josh Nason from the Wrestling Observer site. He will be joining us. We're going to chat a bit about Paramount's engulfing of Zuffa Boxing, UFC, taking it all in. Wouldn't you? The Ellisons have been very kind to TKO over the last 30 days. We'll talk about that. It is the anniversary of AEW Dynamite turning 6 years old this week, and they will celebrate tonight by going 2.5 hours from Hollywood, Florida.
It's going to be two and a half hours.
You can't contain an anniversary show into just 2 hours with an overrun. We're going right till 10:30 tonight. Maybe an overrun. Maybe we'll go to three. Why not? And a topic I can't wait to talk to Brandon about. It's the Riyadh Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. Brandon and I, we have our tickets. We're going to preview all of the comedians that are lined up, and we're going to do a full preview of the Riyadh Comedy Festival that is going on this week, coinciding with the murder of Jamal Khashoggi on Thursday.
Yes. I've heard the contracts have been leaked, or at least a portion of them.
Details have been released. I don't know what. We will contrast to kind of our the comments made by other companies that have business in Saudi Arabia and the comedians that have faced flack for going over there. So one of whom was fired already before he even got over there. So we'll talk about that too. But let us begin, Brandon. AEW Dynamite, it is their anniversary tonight. 6 years old. The show launched October 2nd, 2019. And this also marks 1 year since the announcement of their renewal with WBD. And I would say that just from my vantage point is that a year ago, everything was centered around the television deal. But even once that TV deal was announced, I think AEW, as Tony Khan has many times compared this year's business to that fourth quarter of 2024, it was not a great time for AEW on a creative front, on a ticket selling front. But a year into this deal with WBD, how would you assess AEW as it winds down 2025 going into 2026? What are some of the major topics, questions that come to mind that an anniversary naturally brings up?
At least in the dynamic, the inescapable dynamic that I and others no doubt contribute to, the dynamic between WWE and AEW, I think that has reversed momentum in 2025. Would you say that's fair to say? the popularity.
In terms of more momentum on the side of AEW than a year ago?
Since Vince McMahon has stepped down twice, the momentum has been in the favor of WWE, and we've seen their attendance really explode. Well, to do really well. TV is complicated, but WWE's, you know, the attendance is, as I say, the cleanest metric we have, and their attendance did really, you know, really increased, doubled basically. I think for Raw and SmackDown, if you check the numbers, that's what you'll see. And and while that happened, 2022 forward, and CM Punk left, and all this stuff, and AEW's attendance declined, and their ratings declined beyond the rate of cable cord cutting and the cable universe. And the quality of the product was under fire. If you're writing in journalistic language, you had certain podcasters even saying that, you know, maybe it's time for Tony Khan to let someone else lead creative. And it's been, I think, positively received since the new year. That's what I hear. And at the same time, WWE's, I think it is sort of, there's not complete zero sum, but there's definitely some push and pull there, when, because I think AEW has to function to some extent as an alternative of the big wrestling brand. And I think especially since WrestleMania or so, that was not a well-received WrestleMania. And AEW has been better than it was in the prior year. And there are a lot of business stories, too, that we've been covering the last several months, that, you know, between ticket prices, sending WrestleMania to Riyadh, and the not well-received WrestleMania, maybe the quality of their product overall has just been a little bit less well-received than it's been in recent years. So I think that is, you know, that has created opportunity and identity, alternative identity for AEW that it has really needed.
Yeah, I would say if we contrast to maybe the general tone around AEW a year ago, I think it's significantly improved, to the point that, like, I think there was just the belief of getting this onto the tracks in any kind of meaningful way. Like, yes, they were going to be cushioned by this television deal, but just in a lot of the week-to-week, the booking, the dialogue attached to the product, 2025 has felt like a year where they have really buttoned down their messaging. They have tried to escape anything that's going to detract from their product and get into a AEW versus WWE discussion, even though that's going to be an inevitable one that they are always attached to. But I think it's been very clear what Tony Khan's decisions have been this year when it comes
Twitter
to that.
Twitter Tony has been toned way down. I don't Twitter know that he's lashed out at anybody on Twitter in this year, I think.
Yeah, I think he now has a code on his phone that he's only allowed like an hour of screen time a day, and Danielson is the only one who has the access to that digit cone.
And not just code. That, too. He's had plenty of opportunities at press conferences and the conference calls to take a shot verbally at WWE. And he has been steadfast to pivot to, we're focused on us and doing really well ourselves.
And even situations where WWE's opened the door for criticism, and they have opted not to take the bait in those cases. Now, no one is going to argue that the balance of power has shifted. WWE is going to be in a very dominant position for the foreseeable future, but there is a segment of the audience that I think they have taken several whacks at this year, from a variety of factors, from ticket pricing and shows like a WrestleMania that were poorly received, going to Saudi Arabia for WrestleMania, all these different factors that AEW, there may be an opening there for some of the fan base. But I would say the biggest, the most recent example of something that AEW has come out on the right side of have been this whole summer and into this past WrestlePalooza All Out, like all these head-to-head battles that you would think were going to take a huge blow to AEW that have not played themselves out in that way. We saw All in Texas be positioned against two WWE shows that day, three WWE shows that weekend, and the result was kind of a disappointing Saturday night's main event number, and Saturday night's main event has quietly is leaving NBC to go exclusively to Peacock. We have seen these NXT shows that were just thrown onto the train tracks and got run over in opposition. And then in this latest example with AEW making the pivot to take All Out to an afternoon show, you know, if you go with, you know, it is very, very preliminary numbers of their pay-per-views, but we don't have any evidence that this pay-per-view got blown out or was, if anything, the early signs point to it like holding up very well. So I'd say that like the head-to-head strategy has not borne out the objective WWE may have set out for.
And to be clear, the pay-per-view numbers that we have are basically limited to some non-quantitative comments that Tony might make, but the Observer reporting numbers that are based on, it sounds like Dave is basing those numbers on some sources that he has in the cable or the pay-per-view industry.
It sounds like one source in the cable industry.
And then extrapolating that onto the rest of the universe.
Yes. So, but what you did outline was very preliminary, but again, like let's just go with, if it's a push to what Forbidden Door did, like that to me is a very big win for AEW compared to what you would forecast a show going up against a main roster PLE, which was the ESPN debut that had all of that promotion behind it. Like that tells me that like this whole head-to-head strategy, if you can weather the storm of a ESPN debut, it does give me more confidence if I'm AEW of, you know, not necessarily being too concerned if this is going to be a method that WWE goes to several more times.
And in just in terms of sentiment, and this is just sentiment, but looking back at the Reddit, the Squared Circle Reddit analysis I did, which just included comments right up to the end of last year of 2024, I'm excited to download gigabytes upon gigabytes of Reddit comments again, maybe at the beginning of 2026 to see how this has progressed as the sentiment of these millions of comments really just became tied around, you know, early 2024, late 2020, the middle of 2023, really. The sentiment for AEW was much higher for the first few years of its existence, and then it's really met in the middle with WWE of late. I expect that might be different now in the new year of 2025. So we'll follow up on that eventually. But I think there are, to add to the other stories, right? It's not just, there is the embracing of Saudi Arabia with WrestleMania going there. But also, I think, you know, maybe the CM Punk story was not a help with him apologizing, although I'm sure that helped their very valuable partnership. But the ticket prices being very high, we've seen how high the ticket prices are for WrestleMania. I assume that's the highest ticket prices in the history of wrestling, probably. And the ESPN deal was it's cool to be on ESPN, but for fans in the United States, you've basically turned a large part of the market, at least to the end of the year, you've turned those events into pay-per-views, essentially.
I'd say several questions that come to mind that we'll be asking maybe over the next couple of months, the next year. Obviously, it's going to be the whatever strategy WWE continues when it comes to AEW and what it puts up against it. By this time next year, is Dynamite going to have head-to-head wrestling competition? And that doesn't have to be WWE, but TNA, which if we go by if Santino Marella is accurate, a bigger TV deal, TNA is number two, right?
That's all it takes.
Just one TV deal. And that changes the whole balance of power.
How's the attendance going for Slammiversary?
Bound for Glory,
about 3,400,
I believe, as we speak. Hasn't quite been the level that Slammiversary was over the summer.
I would suggest, you know, I mean, no doubt Dynamite's, you know, AEW has its attendance issues, and you're seeing them do residences because that's just a cheaper way to run TV, and probably acceptable enough to their TV partner. But I mean, look at what AEW does for their pay-per-views, where they're still able to pack in, you know, an NBA sized arena, you know, over 10,000 usually, right, for their pay-per-views, or in the high thousands. Not seeing TNA do that yet.
I guess another one is when it comes to certain performers, like Chris Jericho's contract is up later this year. And you do wonder when it comes to some of their aging performers, like an Adam Copeland, a Christian Cage, like where do those figures find themselves in the mix in AEW in the year to come? I do think a bit of a byproduct this year has been, like, there has been a general focus on a lot of their younger stars or stars that are, you know, you've just seen like the build around people like a Hangman Page and a Will Ospreay and a Swerve and an MJF. And, you know, this has been a year where Jericho's been gone since April. Adam Copeland at this point is kind of a sporadic performer when you're talking about things. There's like a year ago, or maybe 2 years back at this point, there were all the complaints about how much time was being dedicated to a Jeff Jarrett. They've definitely gotten away from that. But yeah, and I think maybe the biggest for 2026 is going to be the lead up to this Wembley Stadium show and how that show performs. That's going to be the big show of the year for the company and a very big undertaking going back to Wembley.
Yeah, I mean, I remember feeling this way about a year ago or a year and a half ago that they have three stars. I mean, it could maybe four with Hangman too. They've kind of resurrected where I thought Hangman was, but Swerve, MJF, and Will Ospreay, and Billy Gunn, of course.
Well, I mean, that goes without saying. And we do have Jerry Lynn that's kind of come back into prominence on television the last couple of weeks to balance things out. We'll talk more with Josh Nason a bit about AEW's anniversary. But everyone, mark down your calendar for Saturday, December 13th. It is John Cena's retirement match. It generated a press release, okay? WWE and TKO in partnership with Events DC. Before I could have even finished that sentence, Brandon had already done a background check on Events DC, a very, very welcoming website. I mean, this looks like I'm going to book my kid's birthday party on this website. Lots of big colors and, you know, it's Events DC, the premier host of conventions, entertainment, sporting, and cultural events in the nation's capital. And large or small, in person, virtual, or hybrid, we make DC happen. And they're going to make John Cena's retirement happen on Saturday night's main event, December 13th, at Monumental Sports and Entertainment's Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. How do our first two stories connect? The site of the very first Dynamite, the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. These turncoats in Washington now backing the WWE for John Cena's retirement, and they're obviously throwing some bucks TKO's way. Mark Shapiro, very happy about this. And as Paul said, John Cena's contributions to WWE are immeasurable. There are no words that can truly relay how much he means to this business. Together with our partners at Events DC and Capital One Arena, we look forward to honoring his legacy and delivering an unforgettable send-off for both John and the cash-strapped WWE universe. Bit of editorializing there.
So I am investigating this, and I think Events DC is closely related to a government agency in the District of Columbia. And lo and behold, the District of Columbia has a wonderful law called the Freedom of Information Act. Mm. And they have been mailed. You have to physically, as I told you yesterday, I sent John Pollock a photo of my physical mail that I had to send to the it called? It's not like the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. It is the Washington Convention and Sports Authority. So these are the variations on what these sports commissions and local organizing committees call themselves.
Well, guess what? Government services are still up and running during a government shutdown. Postal workers, they're going to get that letter.
Certainly.
These folks on the receiving end might not be there. I don't know what the state of Events DC is at the moment.
The post office is a self-sufficient business. They don't need government funding.
That's it. The post office can always be relied upon no matter where your parties.
And I'm making my contributions to the U.S. Postal Service by sending certified mail to other government agencies.
Yes. As you and I learned in past reporting, sometimes physical mail is the only way to get a hold of somebody.
That's what you've got to do sometimes. You just got to mail somebody so you can say, hey, look, we couldn't find your phone number anywhere, but we physically mailed you overnight letter with my contact information.
Yeah, still awaiting a response. This should be, to say the least, a giant gate that they're going to do for this John Cena retirement show. This will be the final Saturday Night's main event of the year. They have another one November 1st. That's going to be the first Peacock exclusive show. And then this show, let's remember, this was the show that they were trying to move to December 30th as they were trying to make AEW's world end on that night. But in fact, they will be running on December 13th. So we will not get John Cena trying to take down AEW's pay-per-view.
Who's going to wrestle on this show?
John Cena will wrestle on this show.
Who is he going to wrestle?
Hiroshi Tanahashi.
I would be for that. I would tune in if that happened.
Who on the WWE roster or within WWE's proximity would you tune in to see John Cena wrestle for his retirement? Will you sample any of this? My guess would be no, but I'm trying to see here if there's anything that
Vince
would
pull McMahon.
You in. Is there what percentage chance of Vince McMahon showing up on this unannounced?
Less than 50.
Less than 50?
Yes, but maybe
how about 25% chance?
25%. Maybe. But less
than 50. John Cena's retirement and Stephanie McMahon's Hall of Fame induction, greater or higher than 50% chance of either?
No. I get the impression that maybe not on the best terms, Stephanie and Vince. I don't know.
I mean, that would be probably a decent assumption there, but I don't know. I could see The Undertaker just coming out. Vince is on the back of the motorcycle. Kid Rock ushers them out to American Badass.
He loves Kid Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. All right. Well, we have breaking news coming out of the camp of Bubba the Love Sponge and Nick Bollea. Much to everyone's chagrin. I was already booking my travel. I was going to go down to Florida, cover this trial in person. But unfortunately, a filing on Tuesday stating that Bubba the Love Sponge and Waltz Films, the distributor of Video Killed the Radio Star, which we have still yet to see, hereby provide notice that the parties have agreed upon a term sheet with settlement terms in an effort to resolve the dispute globally and are continuing with such discussions. Upon the parties' execution of a written settlement agreement, fully memorializing a resolution, the appropriate party shall file documents to dismiss this case. So, we have not officially settled this, but it sounds like we're at the 5-yard line, and more than likely, this is going to be settled, terms of which I'm going to guess will not be disclosed, and maybe the olive branch will be Nick Bollea appearing on Bubba the Love Sponge's radio show. And
I haven't looked, but I don't think this has been reported elsewhere. Straight from the court. So this is, it should be noted, this is only the defendants who are saying this. Highly doubt that they're saying this, though, without the plaintiffs truly being on board.
If Terry McCoy is listening, you can send us a super chat if you have a disagreement toward this.
Yeah. We're monitoring the chat. If Nick Bollea is in there, let us know. There's still time I would imagine they're going to make some settlement that just, you know, maybe satisfies the Bollea estate and will allow them to carry on with their film so it can still be reviewed on Post Wrestling Cafe.
Maybe Nick Bollea and Terry McCoy said, listen, we will drop this suit. You can continue to distribute this documentary, but for the love of God and every citizen, this thing needs to be edited down to 90 minutes. There is no way that this deserves 3 hours and 10 minutes of screen time. You have to hire an editor and get this thing down to a reasonable runtime. This cannot be longer.
If they don't edit it, you've got Terry McCoy's timestamps. He's done some of the reviewing work for you in that filing we saw a couple weeks ago, where he sat down and timestamped all the instances where the copyrighted work, that is the Hogan sex tape, appeared in the documentary.
Yeah. For those that have not looked at this documentary, it is the Irishman of sex tape documentaries.
Very long.
It's long. Yes. Yes, said Hulk Hogan on the stand.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
All right, Paramount, they have grabbed Zuffa Boxing, what was called a very poorly kept secret. It was believed that largely this was, they were just spacing out these announcements with Paramount. First, getting the entire UFC television rights package for the U.S., now adding Zuffa Boxing. Paramount, a Skydance corporation, in case you were living under a rock, and TKO, a premium sports and entertainment company, announced a long-term media rights agreement. How long-term? Front Office Sports reports it's a 5-year deal in which Paramount Plus will become the exclusive home of Zuffa Boxing throughout the U.S., Canada, and LATAM. Zuffa Boxing is the new professional boxing promotion formed by TKO and Sella, with leadership from Dana White, Turki Alsheikh, and president of the Saudi Boxing Federation, Dr. Rakan Al-Harthy, as well as WWE president and TKO board member Nick Khan. Beginning in January 26, Paramount will exclusively distribute a full slate of Zuffa Boxing events, starting with 12 action-packed cards, with plans to grow that number in subsequent years. The belts will be available via Paramount's direct-to-consumer platform, Paramount Plus, with the potential for select events to be simulcast on CBS, America's leading broadcast network, and other Paramount platforms. CBS, also the home of 60 Minutes.
Yes. More on that later. This was, we don't have a dollar figure on this, correct?
No, there's been no, that I have seen, no financial details. I mean, I would imagine this is a fraction of what
the UFC deal
is worth.
Also a 5-year deal?
UFC deal is 7 years.
Seven years.
$1.1 billion.
So that is a difference. It's not just, oh, it was also part of the contract. We just waited until now to announce it. It does have a separate term. Well, that's right. Yeah, I see this in the Front Office Sports article. So this is going to cover Canada, too. Is the other deal covering Canada? Where do you watch UFC
in Canada? It is, their deal is with Rogers Sportsnet in Canada. So the UFC deal is US only. This one includes Latin America and Canada. So
no Netflix.
There's no Netflix for UFC.
Well, no Netflix for this boxing deal after the major boxing cards that Netflix has broadcast.
This is a little confusing because there are the Riyadh season cards, which are the big, like what Canelo and Bud Crawford just had their fight. Those are Riyadh season cards. Those are separate from this Zuffa Boxing.
Those will continue.
These, they're somewhat tiering these. That Riyadh season are the big, big events that they will do several times per year. Those are your super fights, which they can still sell to outside entities, including Netflix.
And that TKO is promoting, and that's what they're getting a fee for. Is that correct?
Yes.
But the Saudis are also involved in Zuffa Boxing.
They're also fronting the bill for this. Yes. You know what? I'm rewinding here. I don't believe, you know, we'll have to fact check this one. Riyadh season is separate from this, but this is still not, TKO is not putting any money into this. Saudi Arabia is cutting the check for all of these events that TKO is in charge of selling the rights for.
Mark Spear has been very clear about emphasizing that they're not spending money here. They're just getting a great fee of $10 million, I think he said.
Yeah, this is not a money pit for TKO. So, I mean, it's an enormous investment by Paramount into everything TKO, as they have now allocated dollars toward this, towards UFC. And they are banking highly on attracting combat sports fans in 2026 and beyond.
But we see Donald Trump on some of these Zuffa Boxing cards.
I don't think we're going to see him at Zuffa Boxing events. I don't think they're up to his level. I don't think so. I think he'll come in for his maybe around the midterms next year. Maybe he'll do some UFC appearances of some sort. He is an elusive figure, as is our guest who is returning. Josh Nason, from the Wrestling Observer website and Josh Nason's Punch Out, the host of the quarterly AEW investor calls. We thought it'd be appropriate to have Josh on here at day one of Q4.
That's right.
Yes, we're here. I hope I don't get fact checked like John did with Dana in the 60 Minutes interview. So if I get out of this with no fact checking, I'm good. All truth here. All truth.
Well, you know what? That's a perfect segue because I decided to do a little 60 minutes in 60 seconds. So here are some highlights of Dana White appearing on Sunday night's edition of 60 Minutes.
Fire away. You know me, man. You've known me for a long time. Fire away. I don't give a
when you hear toxic masculinity.
What's that mean?
You tell me.
No. You just said it. What's the definition of toxic? How can somebody be too masculine? Is that a possibility? Can you be too masculine?
You tell me.
No.
You think so?
The answer is hell no.
Your media rights deal basically doubled. Is fighter pay going to increase proportionally?
I can't sit here right now and tell you, you know, it's double, it's one and a half, it's triple. But yeah, fighter pay is, yeah, it's going to be good.
Do you pay fighters a fair wage?
Absolutely.
So is there anything a fighter can say, tweet, do that you say, you know what, there got to be consequences?
I'm a big believer in free speech. And unfortunately, probably the most important speech to protect is hate speech.
You're not a fan of cancel culture.
No, I hate it. On both sides. It's like all the stuff that's going on with Charlie right now. You know, these people are going out and saying stuff and, you know, you're seeing people getting fired or kicked out of school.
You don't think they should be fired?
I think you're a disgusting human being if you're celebrating the death of another human being. But people make mistakes. And people are going to do dumb things. I don't like trying to destroy people's lives over doing something dumb.
So the question that naturally comes out of that, can you be too masculine? It's a battle I go through every day.
Yeah.
Can I be more masculine? Is this something that all men are going through in this day and age, trying to contain their masculinity, Josh?
Yeah, I walk around, you know, do the, you know, the Triple H, you know, like this. And that's why I have the shaved head and the beard. You know, you got to fit in.
Yeah.
You got to fit in. I'm hopefully do a down payment on a big monster truck and just, you know, just let it go. You know, just let it go. You know, there's no way you can't be too masculine, right?
Were you surprised at all by this piece? And did you have any expectation going into it? Because it certainly felt like they had been working on this piece for quite a while, but it comes out hours before this announcement of the Zuffa boxing deal. And I think, you know, 60 Minutes, I think it's very fair that people are looking a lot more critically at 60 Minutes after all that has gone down in the midst of this whole Skydance merger. And you watch this and, you know, this was one where, you know, certain topics were brought up, but I didn't think went into any kind of depth and was desperately needing some context to it. I was curious if you had any like takeaway thoughts from this 13-minute feature.
Yeah, it was unspectacular, I think. You know, usually when if there's interesting quotes, as we know in today's aggregation culture and so on and so forth, anything is picked apart for headlines and all that. I didn't see a lot coming out of this. I think I saw the fact checking on Post, and that was about it. There just wasn't a lot there. And obviously, 60 Minutes is owned by CBS or is on CBS. Owned by Paramount. So, you know, I don't know if there's any type of like insinuation that maybe they shouldn't press, but, you know, John Wertheim, obviously he wrote that MMA book a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, did I expect him to get like pressed or anything at that? I mean, I guess he did a little bit, but he's answered all these questions before, and his defense when it comes to non-influencer podcast is to get a little bit combative, but do it in a way that's not Vince McMahon and Bob Costas and Armin Katayan, you know? So, no, there wasn't anything coming out of it, and I don't really know if I expect anything to come out of it.
They did preface the whole segment by saying that they have a deal. They had been working on this for a while and that they do have a deal with UFC. They did not – I had not watched this yet until – yesterday. So I had read the press release about the boxing deal by that time. And I was almost wondering, like, did they just announce it on 60 Minutes? But no, they did not. They did not reveal that scoop.
Yeah, no. that would have been the the church and state kind not existing at all if they announced a big deal right at the end of it. But, you know, well, there's nothing that surprises me now when it comes to really anything at this point.
I mean, there was like the discussion about like hate speech was brought up, and I think it's, you know, Dana White has very much made that his brand. And like, again, in my piece, like, you go back to a time, and Josh, you certainly remember, where this fighter code of conduct was being enforced pretty regularly, to the point of like guys being fired over like Miguel Torres making a rape joke over a decade ago. But it wasn't even that long ago, during the pandemic, when it was like, this is your forum for non-politics in the depths of COVID that you could tune in. This was not going to be hitting, like, this is your escape from everything. And now how much this promotion has become the avatar for this administration in many ways. And I would have liked to have heard more of a pressing on that. I mean, they isolated one clip from Bryce Mitchell just defending this great company that will let you say anything. And I think that the viewer would want to know, well, why did you pick Bryce Mitchell for that particular thing? What has Bryce Mitchell said? Like, maybe if we actually heard the context of Bryce Mitchell explaining that he didn't think Hitler was such a bad guy, wouldn't mind going fishing with a Hitler, because pre-meth, he wasn't so bad of a guy. It was the meth. Maybe that would be a helpful context of why we decided to choose Bryce Mitchell, of all people, to just talk about the First Amendment.
Right. More like Sean Strickland and some of these things as well. Yeah. I mean, I think I just don't think he wants to deal with it. And I think it's easier to have this blanket statement of we believe in, you know, all types of free speech and all this stuff. It doesn't really apply to like bring flags out to the cage. I remember, what was that, last year or 2 years ago? They said, oh, anyone could bring, you know, any flags out or anything like that. And then there was, I can't remember what, if it was a Middle Eastern country, perhaps, or there was one country that they said, I'm not allowed to do this. I believe one fighter wanted to wear a turban out to the cage, was not allowed to do that. So it was kind of selective, right? So, yeah, I...
But let's also not forget the third rail, okay? The one thing you cannot do is scoop us on a fight announcement a few hours before we announce it on the broadcast.
That's over the line.
Every amendment has its limits, okay? And that is it, okay? You do not scoop fights.
Look, you're going to ruin the experience for those at home. I mean, I understand it. Get these people from MMA fighting out of here. You know what I mean? They're going to ruin the Brock announcement and all that stuff. Well, who's the guy that broke that? Is he still in the business? I don't even know.
You know what? Never heard from him again after 2016. Huh. You know, that was it. It's turned out okay for him as well. I mean, that was the piece in a nutshell. I think, you know, we're entering this period where I think this certainly applies to wrestling too. I think there's going to be those that are very much going to focus on CBS's coverage of the UFC and ESPN's on WWE. Like, this is just, as you said, Josh, like this is the ecosystem we are in now. And I think, you're going to be watching this coverage with that certain perspective on things. And that's just the way things are in this landscape of media.
The difference now is people don't care that are in a position to have change, right? We care, but we come from a much different media background in so many different ways, which this past few years, and really, I don't know, 5 years more, kind of this degradation thanks to social media and everything, is really everything we learned, it doesn't exist. It all depends, do the people in power care, do the sponsors care, and things like that. And frankly, they don't, you know, I mean, Slim Jim pulled out when Vince McMahon returned, right? But we've seen no issues then when, you know, Brock Lesnar came back or anything like that. In other situations, you know, them going to Saudi Arabia, sponsors don't seem to care there. If the people in power and the people paying the money don't care, then, you know, we can complain all we want, and we should, and it's key to be watchdogs, but you just feel like this, the collective that did care and kind of drive the right thing to do forward is just degrades every day, because the voices are so loud on this other side of saying, why should we care? Why should we care? You're ruining our fun. And if the people in power are like, we're going to listen to them, what good does it do? We're going to say, we should say things, but it just feels that power is just, it degrades by the day, unfortunately.
Yeah. I do think there's been a pendulum that swung back the other way from, if, you know, Me Too in 2018 was it swinging one way, it does seem to have swung back the other way. And I do wonder if, you know, if certain people had, you know, who lost their jobs or got, you know, fired or going, if that would have happened, if similar things happened today.
Sure. Yeah. I think we'll never know. We'll never know, but we'll see. I mean, I think a point you guys made last week, which you said it, John, and a giant light bulb just kind of went off, is I would not be surprised if Vince McMahon get inducted in the Hall of Fame in Saudi and by Turkey. You said that, and I had not thought of it. And I'm like, oh my God, it's totally going to happen, isn't it? Right? A lot could happen between now and then, but would I be surprised by that? 0.0%.
Yeah, I'm at a point now where I'm not saying I'm waiting for it to happen or making it a guarantee, but I mean, I just I like really the only obstacle to that happening is a blocking by WWE internally that doesn't want to be in the Vince McMahon business. I don't think it comes down to anything regarding optics or backlash. I don't think any of that. I think that's out the window at this point.
Yeah, and if there's going to be a time of a political issue or within an internal political issue within WWE of
that's it.
Would he exude more influence? Would there be the perception that he would exude more influence? Do we want to consider the risk around that? I think that's probably more the concern at this point, more than whether Slim Jim would, you know, pull out of a sponsorship or something like that.
Yeah, I think like it's like the dark example, but the day of Vince McMahon passes away, there is going to be the extraordinary celebration of Vince McMahon on WWE programming. Like that to me is a given. And now it just becomes an issue of like, if there is someone of influence, like a Turkey that wants to honor Vince McMahon and give him his like retirement speech in Saudi Arabia, that's a big pressure point that would be in Vince McMahon's favor if he is willing to do it. And I think when we heard him and the TMZ piece about Hulk Hogan, I think very much he would like to be on to get that reach out from WWE to be utilized, even if it's for just a one-off appearance of some sort.
Yeah.
And if the comments we hear from, you know, people who worked with Vince over the years, whether it's, I don't know, Mark Henry or, you know, John Layfield and people like that, who I imagine feel very close to Vince, and they don't view him as completely toxic. And I'm sure there are a ton of people and a lot of sentiment in WWE and in the WWE culture who feel like, well, he never got his proper send off, and he deserves that.
I mean, Stephanie tried her best to give him the best possible send off.
Thank you,
when
Vince.
He was retiring. Yes. But maybe she can lead an updated chant for everybody. You know, Josh, I figured this is as good a topic as any to move over to. How much have you been following the coverage of the Riyadh Comedy Festival that is currently ongoing? Because for those that are maybe not up to speed, I go to our Human Rights Watch that did put out a statement that the Saudi government is using the Riyadh Comedy Festival from September 26th to October 9th to deflect attention from its brutal repression of free speech and other pervasive human rights violations. The festival dates include the 7th anniversary of Saudi state-sponsored murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and takes place just months after Saudi authorities executed a journalist, apparently, for his public speech. Comedians that are going over there include Aziz Ansari, Hannibal Buress, Bill Burr, Jimmy Carr, Dave Chappelle, Pete Davidson, others here, Tom Segura. Tim Dillon was scheduled to perform, but said he was fired after he joked on his podcast about Saudi Arabia's poor human rights record. He made a joke about slavery and he alleges that he was going to get $375,000 for a date in Saudi Arabia. So that tells you what, you know, a Tim Dillon level was making for this. So you can imagine what the Dave Chappelle and Bill Burrs of the world are commanding for this. The thing that beyond the obvious comparison to like what we talk about, like, is there that much care when WWE are going over this one? I think just because of the climate with this Jimmy Kimmel story and this becoming like a free speech story, this has become like a very big lightning rod for all of these comedians going over there. And the comedians that have spoken publicly about this, unlike WWE, that are talking about, well, you can't change things from your home, you have to be part of the change. I mean, the comedians are flat out stating, listen, I don't agree with it, but man, I'm getting a bag for this. And I'm just, I'm going there for the money. Like, in some ways, you appreciate just the honesty here. I'm a hypocrite, but I'm doing this for the bag. And that's essentially what they are doing here. But this has gotten a lot of controversy from fellow comics as well for these performers that are going over there with these restrictions in place, at least according to one comedian.
Yeah, I followed it a little bit. I watch a show called Breaking Points, which is on YouTube. It's very, you know, very down the middle, which is good. And they did a long segment on this earlier this week and talked about some of the, yeah, the reactions that, like, the Tim Dillon thing. And he's still got paid some of his money, which is good for him. He doesn't have to go. And then the reaction from Shane Gillis and the,
Shane Gillis, like, turned this down. They upped his pay. But I mean, credit to him. Like, he's like, listen, I said no on principle. I'm not going to, like, just, change my stance because more money was offered, and he's not going.
Well, the quote was, I don't want a 9/11, my friends. That was the quote that he said. And Kevin Hart is going over to this thing too. And another comedian that was asked to go over, shared some of the info that a woman or a man got from their agent. And basically it was kind of like, it was restricting some of the speech that they could say and kind of just to be careful of and so on and so forth. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, this is it right here. So, yeah, it seems to be very, very divisive within the comedy community. And I assume once this thing is done and people can come back and feel safe to come back and they can say whatever they want to say, unless this is an ongoing thing, we're going to be hearing more about this as comedians kind of share their experiences and so on and so forth. But it is fascinating. This, and of course, before this, this announcement, this flag football league, and that resonated here because I'm with Tom Brady. I'm New Hampshire, so Tom Brady, it's like, what is this guy doing? Like, why is he even coming back? And there's active players that are going to be involved in this, and the NFL, the Saudis have, they have tentacles in everything. They have their hands in everything, in all these businesses and industries. And the video game company, right? EA, they have a big stake in that, apparently. So, I mean, it's not like, hey, where did these guys come from? They've been here for a long time, and their money has been here for a long time too. And that's not going to stop anytime soon.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away, covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and W.H. Park, and the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe.
Yeah, I just want to read that this is an excerpt that was shared from an agreement that was offered to one comedian. The content restrictions are that the artist shall not prepare or perform any material that may be considered to degrade, defame, or bring into public disrepute, contempt, scandal, embarrassment, or ridicule of A, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, including its leadership, public figures, culture, or people, B, the Saudi royal family, legal system, or government, and C, any religion, religious tradition, religious figure, or religious practice. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're, you know, broadly having people who they do business with agree to this. I think it's really important to point out, like, when we have conversations about these business arrangements with the Saudi government, that it is it's the Saudi government. It's not just a business, a private business. When people point to we have a lot of our own problems here in the United States. When you do business, you know, with a private company, that's one thing. But when you do business with the government, and maybe this is more along the lines of getting paid really well to perform at the inauguration or something like that, and the criticism that some of the entertainers have and executives have received for attending the inauguration. This is... or, you know, UFC on the White House lawn would be the more comparable situation, where you're doing business with a government, not just a private business that's trying to make a profit, but with a government that has larger goals than profit in mind.
Yeah, I think as well, there's a hypocrisy aspect to this among some comedians that have sort of railed against cancel culture and being restricted in what they can say. And like someone like Andrew Schultz, for instance, who has, like, you know, advocated for this on his show and yet you are going to a place where you are essentially being silenced on what you can say. And I mean, if like, as long as you're going to be transparent about that, like, that is what this is. But it doesn't mean you get to escape backlash for this very public display of hypocrisy. And I think it does show you just the, like, in a transparent way, like, what they are trying to do here is, you know, this is laundering the image of Saudi Arabia, and they're going to do it at great expense. And those that are willing to take it are going to make a lot of money for these gigs. But there is also a tax on taking these gigs, especially when you have spoken very differently about, you know, lack of freedoms or cancel culture and topics like that. And then you're going to enter a place that is going to be greatly restrictive on what you can say and kind of manage you. And I think people generally have a belief of comedians operating outside of that restriction.
Yeah, I think it depends on – you think about these comedians now, comedy is so huge, especially with podcasts and everything. Is this going to hurt their business, their company? And I'm sure these decisions are not made in a silo. They're talking to their management team. They're talking to their social media team. They're talking everything. Be like, as a brand, as a company, does this make sense? Yeah, there's the money. But is this going to cost me, you know, half my audience going out on a national tour that's being planned for 2026? Is this going to cost me podcast advertising? Is this going to do this? And that's what every person that takes the money, goes over there, does something, they have to assess. So I'm going to guess that all of these comedians either don't have assessed, they're like, well, we could take a hit, but we don't care. Or they're like, look, we're going to do this one time. We'll see how it goes. We'll go out and tour in 2027 and people just forgot about it. People may just forget about it in a couple months, right? It's assessing the risks and the rewards. And in this case, it's a financial reward. And most of these comedians are saying it's minimal risk on the other side. And I'm sure they'll talk about it afterward, and that will get good views, and that'll make up some money on their podcast and YouTube and things like that. It's all risk assessment. That's what it is now. The morals have kind of gone out the window for most. Not all.
And it's nothing that Formula One isn't doing, and that soccer isn't doing, and WWE isn't doing, and every boxer isn't doing. Everybody's doing it. So what's the big deal?
Yeah, that's the way it is now.
And as much attention as this story has gotten, like, nowhere, like, the comp that a lot of them make is like to Live Golf, for instance. Like, WWE just like is just
not Live Golf.
WWE isn't even like brought up in any of these stories. And no. Like, just putting a bow on this topic, like, the big discussion was like CM Punk going over earlier this year, and the guy took a lot of criticism going over there. But all these months later, like, do you assess like his reputation was damaged in any meaningful way? Because he seemed to be the one that was like, if you're talking about a character that could take any kind of damage from something like that, it would be a CM Punk. And yeah, like, I would say if he was making that calculation, like, he did it and there was backlash towards him, but he was right back on television the next week in the US and as over as ever.
Yeah. I think the only damage would be, you know, if he comes out and has a big stand on something again, how do you believe him? Right. As I wrote a column on our site about it on WrestlingObserver.com about that, like, I mean, he said this stuff, but if you're a fan of his and you really got behind a lot of the causes that he's talked about, wore shirts for and things like that, I believe abortion rights, LGBTQ rights, Chicago Teachers Union, all those things, that's great. And it's great to be supportive of those groups and those causes. He could change his mind in 2 years. He changed his mind on this in a few, right? So, I mean, it wasn't just that he made the decision to go. He was, if you look back, like, the Pardon My Take appearance he did several years ago, and this is, I think, before he went to AEW, try and remember the time frame. He was very forceful, being like, I can't remember what the language is, but he was like, I'm not going there. And he did. Times changed, finances changed, and all that. So that would be what I would say long term may stick is these other causes. And he may say, well, it's a different scenario. I don't know that. His fans don't know that. The people that care don't know that. So it's very interesting times we find ourselves in the morals and what we believe in, what our heroes believe in, and celebrities and all that. And it's hard. You got to try to parse through it and figure out what feels right to you. And what may feel right to you may not feel right to another fan, but it's where we're at these days.
Tonight is the sixth anniversary of Dynamite, Josh, and we were discussing earlier in the program sort of the where AEW has come over the past year, because I think we look at last year at this time in light of the TV deal that was standing was, you know, pretty low, a low ebb for this company when it came to just general fan sentiment. And now here at this sixth anniversary, like, where is AEW sitting after a year where they have had, you know, a year under their belt under this new WBD deal? They have been, you know, counter-programmed many times over the past couple of months and going ahead to 2026.
Well, I mean, as far, I mean, I'm told that they have what, 2 million WBD viewers on WBD, right? That's undisputed. I've been told they're going to go out of business, right? Because of all these reasons. I'm not sure which one is right today. I think
they're a TV deal away from being the number three company in the country.
True. Exactly. Santino Marella getting involved in the fray. How about that? As an overall, the last 6 years, it's good to great that they're around. It's good to have and great to have a strong number two, not just for fans that can watch different things and see different presentations of this thing called pro wrestling, for the talent and staff and people behind the scenes and everything. It's great because more people can make money and more people can make more money. There's sides to play off each other and at least consider. And that's a good thing. Yeah, TNA was around forever, but they weren't like this, right? I think in the last year, it's interesting because it seems like, you know, their pay-per-view numbers have stayed pretty consistent, which I would say is a strong point. They haven't really, they have some spikes up, but there's nothing that really like drops that you're going to see, like, you know, 100,000 dropped to like 50,000 or something like that. Even on the 20th, when he came against WrestlePalooza, there was a big question about that. And the big thing is that it's not showing in attendance. People aren't getting out to watch shows. I still think that's a big red circle. Brandon and I have talked about this before on my show. People love to go out to things, right? It's not COVID. It's not, you guys talked about ticket prices earlier, talked about ticket prices a lot. I believe last week you talked about WrestleMania and I know you talked a little bit about that today. People are willing to pay for concerts. People are willing to pay for entertainment. So why are more people, if all these people are watching from home, why aren't they more people willing to go to an AEW show? Why are they averaging in that, you know, the Diamond Range 2,500 and Collision a little bit lower? Why is that? There's a fundamental reason why. Is it just not big enough stars? Is it simply they're just not established where they, in my opinion, that they don't trust the brand enough to bring the top talent to just buy a ticket right when it comes out? WWE, you can, because you generally know three out of the top five people on that brand are going to be there, right? You generally know that. You're going to get your intros and things like that. That's a big thing with AEW in terms of their week-to-week TV. Now, the pay-per-view still, for the most part, seem fairly strong, you know, the gates and all that. But it's that week-to-week TV. I don't fully get it. And so that's the kind of thing of, like, success in the last year. If I'm looking at where we're going to talk on the seventh anniversary next year, assuming they're still around, right? How do they get more people to go to their weekly shows? How do they make them must-see? The wrestling is... No one can, any true player that really cares about the in-ring can complain about what AEW gives you on a week-to-week basis. But for some reason, that's not enough for people to say, I'm going to go sit in a seat, and the prices aren't like super expensive. So where is that disconnect? That's the thing I'd be banging my head against the wall trying to figure out, is how do we get more people to come to shows?
And you would have thought, Josh, that this year, like this past weekend, Collision was in Huntington, West Virginia, which is a market that is never getting a WWE TV. It's right. Never getting a PLE. And these are markets that maybe would get their 1 to 2 house shows a year that they're no longer getting. And maybe that just goes to the just theory that just like there are WWE fans and then there are wrestling fans. And that doesn't just necessarily mean AEW comes to town and you go from being a WWE ticket buyer to this is going to fill my 1 to 2 wrestling shows a year. But it is... to me, the area of AEW's business that you can look at with the most critical eye is that no matter, like, they are generally positively received shows. Like, every show has its misses, but there are far more hits, and that has not trickled to a surge in attendance for whatever reasons. And I don't have, like, the clear answer on that either.
Yeah, I wonder, again, you go back kind of the good to great in-ring wrestling thing, right? I just wonder, because we have access to so much stuff now, if fans are just not engaged enough to be like, I need to see this in person. Are they too desensitized where they're saying, I can watch stuff on these different streaming services, on YouTube, I watch AEW, I got 18 hours of a pay-per-view from AEW the other day, right? I got it, and I don't need to go see it because I can sit here from my couch and I can don't have to spend a lot of money and I can just enjoy it as is. I don't know. I keep thinking at some point, Brandon and I have talked about this as well, they should do a more expansive European tour, I think, at some point. Just, if you're going to take the risk, you're getting the money, where's the gamble? Take a gamble and try something different. Now, they're doing a few more dates this year, which is good. But I don't know if you're ever going to get the WWE-style tour, but, like, now's the time to maybe kind of roll the dice a little bit. And, yeah, it's going to be expensive to keep those people on the road for a couple weeks. Why not? Why not give it a shot instead of, again, playing 2,000 people, and no disrespect to Huntington, West Virginia. But you know what I mean? Just when you're going to try it at some point. Why not now?
Yeah, I just think that the product is just not hot enough. I know we've got people, including in our chat, discussing whether they just don't promote the shows enough. When AEW comes to my town, I barely see any advertising, and that would help incrementally if they promoted more or promoted more effectively. But, you know, why did WWF go from what their attendances were in 1996 to what they were in 1998? Because the product became very hot because of, yeah, certain stars were set on fire, and that's,
you know, well, AEW could do that. They do set their stars on fire.
They do. Literally, though, is the problem.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's, yeah, a, there's, you know, you don't just have an immolation on your pay-per-view without advertising it in advance. Okay. That's, sure, that's the misfire, so to speak. We're going to park it there, Josh, but I do believe that you will be at some point doing a, third quarter earnings report with Brandon Thurston. Is that in the pipeline?
Yes, next few weeks. I have two quick questions for you before we go, if you have a couple minutes. Smash Machine, have you seen that yet, John?
I didn't see it when it was up here at TIFF, but I'm planning to go when it comes out. I am looking forward to it. I've heard good things, and I know that you did get a chance to see it, correct?
I did. Yeah, I saw it last Monday, or yeah, Monday ago. I got access to a screening. I enjoyed it. People can check out my recap. Nice segue. People can check out my recap on Josh Nason's Punch Out. You can look at F4W Online and also Spotify or Apple Podcasts, absolutely free. And I also talked to Boss Rutan for about 15, 20 minutes about his role in the movie. I thought it was really entertaining. And I don't go into these movies thinking, I know I'm going to like this and you have to talk my way out of it. I go into thinking, this could be terrible. This could be great. I'm just going to see what happens. I really enjoyed it. I think that he really, if you look at these guys side by side, like, for that era, it is scary how similar they look build wise, hair wise, and all that. And it made it easy to kind of get lost in the whole Mark Kirk character that Johnson was playing. There's a few very intense scenes. Emily Blunt is really good. Boss Rutan is Boss Rutan, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to him. I thought Ryan Bader was good. Again, he's not, he hasn't, not, not an actor by any means, but I thought he did his part, but he's playing Mark Coleman, but he looked like Ryan Bader. So for me, it was tough because I'm in the bubble. I'm here to see what people outside the bubble think. But yeah, it comes out Friday. And yeah, I think it's well worth the watch. I'm interested what the historians think, if it's pretty accurate or not. You know, the Jonathan Stone types, other people have, you know, watched Pride a lot, like yourself, John, and know the history and other people. So I'm interested about that. The one other thing, too, I was thinking about this today. AI and wrestling. Is there a connection there? Will there be a connection? AI is just like, it's all over the place. I just wonder, for big companies like a WWE, AEW, and so on, is there any advantages? Do we not know yet? Nothing is apparent to me, but I'm not sure Maybe that's the point, is I'm not looking at the, in the right spot. I was just thinking
this
about
is probably Brandon's feel, like in terms of more direct.
Look at that smile. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Immediately, not really. I mean, it helps you generate ideas, I guess. In terms of data analysis, oh, yes.
When are we going to have the first AI-booked wrestling company, like on the indies? It should be AIW in Cleveland, I think, maybe.
Oh,
they could experiment with it. John Thorne.
I am doing a data project right now that's nowhere near ready, that is using large language models to help do data analysis.
Interesting.
I'll tell you what my pet peeve is, and this is not really – well, I'm sure this has hit the wrestling book segment out there, but like when you have a new book come out, like Kamala Harris's book that just came out, and then you can go on Amazon, and then you've got all these like knockoffs of the book that have just been generated by AI models that you can have.
Oh, really? I haven't noticed that.
There yet. Are like any prominent book that has come out, there's like the AI knockoff that you can find on Amazon, and it's just – yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely not anti AI, but at the same time, I think this is the era where no one's going to proceed with caution, and then we'll all suffer the effects of it in like 5 years. And said, man, back in 2025, we really should have had a better handle on this.
Yeah, I'm pretty scared of what's going to happen in the future, and we're all laughing about it now. But boy, we're heading for something. I tell you what, we're just handing everything over. And
I'm see about that AI actress now that might get representation. I was like, we're now living through the Minority Report. Like that is what that is now turning into a documentary 23 years later.
But yeah, you can check me out on WrestlingObserver.com, Josh Nason's Punch Out. Segue back. No AI involved in that, but yeah, I'm going to talk to Brandon in a couple weeks. I'm talking to Guy Evans, who wrote the Nitro book and also the Fallout book, talking this week. Talking to a former WWE announcer next week. I won't give the name, so I want to make sure everything comes through, but someone that really – no one really talks to a lot in terms of WWE stuff, so I'm interested to talk to him.
Oh, this isn't Kevin Kelly, is it?
No, not Kevin Kelly.
We need a lawsuit update.
I know. I just talked to AJ Kirsch the other day from the Tough Enough days, and he's involved with Savannah Banana's main rival, the Party Animals. That was a fun conversation. And yeah, I talked to Boss Rutten. So yeah, just people that are kind of like around the periphery of pro wrestling and involved in this stuff. So it's a lot of fun and always great to be here. My favorite show I listen to every single week without fail, and no matter who is hosting. And I'm always happy to be back. I love this show. And thank you for having me once again.
We love having you on. Thanks, Josh. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you in the near future.
Sounds great.
All right, Josh Nason joining us.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Brandon, did you happen to have CPAC on Tuesday?
CPAC?
Do you not have a CPAC?
What's CPAC? C-SPAN? You're trying to say C-SPAN?
Sorry, it's CPAC here in Canada, I think. Okay. C-SPAN. Yeah. CPAC is the Canadian version, I believe, as I'm looking at this now. CPAC. Watch for Democracy. This is Public Affairs in Canada, so my apologies, folks. Yes, Stephanie McMahon goes to Washington, flanked by Paul Levesque and Linda McMahon as well. They're just slowly taking over the White House, and there was Stephanie to deliver a speech in just moments before Donald Trump would sign several executive orders to help fund AI research into pediatric cancer. So this is where AI is going. So this from CNN. President Trump signed an executive order Tuesday that the White House says will use artificial intelligence to transform the way scientists fight childhood cancer. However, the move comes amid cuts to hundreds of millions of dollars in science research grants and proposed cuts to the budget of the nation's primary agency for cancer research and training. Moves that experts say could mean dramatic losses in cancer treatments. That was not mentioned. Trump said, "We're going to defeat childhood cancer once and for all. I'm thrilled to sign a very historic executive order to massively accelerate pediatric cancer research and harness the extraordinary potential of AI to fight this terrible disease." And Stephanie McMahon, she spoke about Connor's cure. And yes, Linda also spoke at this as well. But there you go. And yes, Robert Kennedy Jr. also spoke
RFK
as well.
RFK Jr. was there. Of course, Donald Trump was there. It was great to see Stephanie with her mother and her father, and of course Paul, the in-laws. You know.
Yeah, I don't think Vince McMahon would ever put a bear into his into the back of his car after he hit it in the middle of a park. To be fair to Vince McMahon, but yes, that was the latest appearance in the Oval Office by the McMahons. John Laurinaitis. He was deposed in the recent shareholder lawsuit. Brandon, you reported on this at WrestleNomics. So this, you want to bring us up to speed? The shareholder suit, it's actually a consolidation of suits that was first filed 2 years ago and is now being, it's going through the discovery phase through the Delaware Chancery Court where secrets go to live.
Yes. So this is a state level court. So we don't have as easy access to it like we do all the federal cases. But when Mark Shapiro says he's going through some litigation referring to Vince McMahon, there are three civil lawsuits that Vince McMahon is dealing with, right? The Janelle Grant lawsuit, which is the one we probably talk about the most. There is the Ring Boy lawsuit. Since about a year ago, that is also happening. And then there's this lawsuit, which is hardly ever talked about. As someone is trying to call
that's,
me. Sorry.
That's actually K&L Gates informing Brandon that there's also the fender bender from this past July that Vince McMahon was involved in. That
that is another legal action.
Did go
not
to court.
Lawsuit,
so.
Not a civil lawsuit, though. But he's in this shareholder lawsuit, which has been going on for quite some time, which alleges that he forced his way back into the company, of course, and that he just decided he was going to make a deal with Ari Emanuel because he knew that only Ari Emanuel, his friend, was going to let him stay with the company after such a transaction. Anybody else that they sold to would never allow Vince to stay on, given the scandal around him. So it's continuing to carry on, and it's really further along, and it is an older case than the other two big lawsuits we talk about. This is quite far along, and there's discovery happening. Maybe this will go to trial someday. But everybody under the sun has been subpoenaed, and so who's actually being sued here is not WWE itself. I'm not sure if WWE might still be footing the legal bill for this, but this is the pension funds that have consolidated against Vince, against Paul Levesque, Nick Khan, George Berrios, and Michelle Wilson. Those are the defendants in this case. But John Laurinaitis has now, as of Friday, presumably he was deposed. That was the day he was going to be deposed from over Zoom in his lawyer's office in Florida. We've got Liberty Media is going to be deposed this coming today. Yesterday.
Yesterday.
We're to be deposed. So presumably that has happened. And KKR, everyone's favorite private equity firm, not clear. I mean, it's not been confirmed on the record, but there's certainly in the case of Liberty Media, there are details that have been disclosed in WWE's own filings about who these bidders were that is consistent with Liberty Media. KKR, maybe KKR was one of the private investment institutions that may have been exploring as well. Nick Khan is a lot of people are set to be deposed, including Vince, Paul, Nick. Basically, if you served on the board during this time, you are being deposed.
This is the gold mine of a Freedom of Information Act request. If you ever were
now, what does this mean? If this all gets published immediately as soon as it happens? No. There might be further motions after discovery is complete. There might be if this goes to a trial, we might hear excerpts of the depositions disclosed. Documents might be disclosed. Also, Vince's assistants, at least in the last years of his career with WWE, who are Paul and Mickey Mangieri, they have both been subpoenaed for documents. So that they're not being deposed, to my knowledge, according to the docket, but they are being subpoenaed for documents. And does this have anything to do with the sexual misconduct situation? It may. And there were, as we reported months ago, there were disputes between Vince and the plaintiffs over how far this should really go. Do you really need information related to the misconduct allegations? And there was litigating over that. It looks like the plaintiffs largely prevailed on that point and that they are getting information related to that. In addition to that, phone numbers. Verizon Communications has been subpoenaed for telephone information related to phone numbers that we believe are consistent with the phone numbers of Vince McMahon, of Ari Emanuel, Nick Khan, and Paul Levesque. So maybe text messages, phone call records. You wouldn't have phone recordings, I don't think, but you would have, oh, so-and-so called so-and-so on such and such date.
Yes. This obviously, this would be a really fascinating case if any of it, you know, saw the light of day. And to me, the overarching question I've always had for this one is the plaintiffs being able to argue successfully, that, you know, the merger with the UFC, like, how do you overcome the results that we have seen in the aftermath of this merger? That if I'm the defense, I'm arguing that no other company was as well equipped than Endeavor to take this live event business that has these astronomical, this experience when it comes to large scale television deals, and look at the value of this company 2 years after it was completed. Like, this has been a home run for this merger in terms of the value of these two companies. But that still does not negate that there may have been a kind of handicap process here by Vince McMahon, and as well being able to prove that none of these other bidders would have retained Vince McMahon if that was the difference between making a deal or not making a deal.
Yeah, we do have information that was disclosed in a filing some 2 years ago about how this process played out, who the other bidders were. Well, not their identities, but they're sort of anonymized. And there are details that we probably talked about some 2 years ago that we could revisit to look into this more deeply. Ultimately, it was an all-stock deal, as we know, that occurred, that resulted in the formation of TKO, as opposed to a cash transaction or something like that.
A brief one here, a recurring figure here on Pollock and Thurston. Dr. Carlin Kolker, we had a proper handoff of medical records with metadata? Or does it still remain to be interpreted based on your definition of disclosure?
According to Dr. Kolker's attorneys, he has now turned over medical records again, but this time with a little more metadata than there ever was before. Basically, this gives, according to him and his attorneys, this has metadata related to whether Janelle Grant's records were ever edited. So now she will presumably, I mean, according to them, she will be able to have that information. Will this satisfy Grant's side? It remains to be seen. There was also information that was that is being sought by Grant's side related to supposed trips that Dr. Kolker took with Vince McMahon, including to Tijuana, Mexico. We don't, that raises eyebrows, but we don't know what that entails. And he is claiming, Dr. Kolker is claiming physician-patient privilege to not disclose that information.
Which just opens up the door of so many questions.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's much disputing that Vince was a patient of Dr. Kolker. Now, whether he can convince the court that his trips that he may have taken with Vince were in the course of treatment, I think that will be a challenge, particularly if they went, if they indeed went to Tijuana, Mexico. Was he treating him in Tijuana, Mexico? I don't know that even if he was traveling with Vince to go oversee medical treatment, let's say, I don't know that he would still be able to withhold the travel logs. But it remains to be litigated.
Ari Emanuel has launched a podcast. It's about time he gets in on the podcast game. I'm sure this will be added to everyone's playlist. From The Hollywood Reporter, after years of representing the best and brightest from the worlds of entertainment, sports, music, and culture, the WME Group Executive Chairman and TKO Group CEO is becoming talent himself, launching a new video podcast called Rushmore. The show debuted on Tuesday with co-host Ben Persky, and they will be joined by titans of industry to discuss who the greatest of all time are in various categories. They will release the first batch of 10 episodes with guests to include Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Elon Musk, Shaquille O'Neal, Reggie Miller, Rick Rubin, Jimmy Iovine, Bob Costas, Al Michaels, and others. And
Rushmore won't just share a format with sports debate shows. It will also share some behind-the-scenes talent. Pat McAfee, whose daily show is simulcast on ESPN and who is a staple of its College Game Day, will produce the show with his team, supported by WME's Pantheon Media Group. So I really hope that this takes off for Ari Emanuel. I hope he can really land some good ad rates on his show and get Ari Emanuel on solid footing in the podcast game.
Yeah, no shortage of guests, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, who is in any position to say no to Ari Emanuel? What a bizarre concept. Like, this just sounds like I woke up one day and I wanted to do a podcast, and we're going to talk about lists.
The Mount Rush. Who's on your Mount Rushmore?
Oh, like, is there a worse question that you just groan at in any field?
The Mount Rushmore. Don't ever ask me that question, please.
Who's on your Mount Rushmore of TV ratings services, and is Programming Insider one of them?
Yeah, well, yes.
It's a very lonely mountain at this point. It's WrestleNomics and it's Programming Insider.
Let's put PW Torch.
PW Torch.
They were correct. Wade Keller was correct about the rating for NXT this past Tuesday, not last night, but two Tuesdays ago. 707,000 viewers, confirmed by CW. I was hoping that CW, if the higher number was correct, that CW would confirm that, and they did. So Programming Insider had lower numbers, and in fact, for Wednesday, had lower numbers, I believe, across the board, not just for NXT, but for Tuesday throughout. And I do have some numbers for Wednesday, not just the Dynamite rating, but some other cable ratings that were lower across the board from what Programming Insider reported. I did talk to Douglas Pucci, who reports this information for Programming Insider, and looks like maybe he's... So as we talked about a few weeks ago, there's this Nielsen change in the big data panel. There's some change to how Nielsen is concocting their data. And
it's causing chaos as a result.
It may be related to that. So we'll see. Wait, we're still waiting for Friday ratings. And fortunately, you know, Wade Keller does have an independent data source that will hopefully help us know what the right numbers are.
Yeah, so... they have been delayed this week in getting several figures out. They have reported up until last Thursday, and don't know what the cause of that delay is, but it could be this issue of wanting to know what is the finalized number as a result of this, because Nielsen has undergone this big swing in terms of trying to better represent streaming data in all of this, but it has also caused a lot of confusion that is out there. That you even heard some analysts state of, like, why are we even reporting these numbers anymore? So, I mean, it's the war on data as it continues.
Yes, it is.
So, therefore, the only viewership we do have to talk about, and then we'll wrap things up with a super chat, is the Raw from last week on September 22nd, which was the second week of the show airing at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and it resulted in its lowest number of views to date since launching on Netflix at 2.3 million, 4.5 million hours viewed. It ranked 8th globally and was 4th in the U.S., 7th in Canada among the 9 countries where it ranked. So this past week's show was also at 7. It reverts back to 8 p.m. next Monday. And the following week, it's going to start at 8 a.m. because it's taking place in Australia. So I'm sure everyone will be up wide awake on a Monday morning to watch Raw. Like, what better way to start your work week?
Yeah, I mean, they're not – you could say that they're not going against Monday Night Football like they were, but I've got it right on par with where it was a year ago at this time, where it was being impacted by Monday Night Football.
Well, there you have the latest on Netflix.
My estimated U.S. viewership, by the way.
We have a super chat. Let's go. Jake from the Windy City, he asks, got my copy of the new Gorilla Monsoon biography from Brian Solomon. Seems to be getting huge buzz lately. What are your thoughts on it, John? Well, it came out on Tuesday, so I have not had a chance to read it yet. I am planning to. It's a very lengthy book. Brian Solomon wrote that great book on the Sheik, Ed Farhat, and has also been part of a panel with my co-host as well. So maybe we will get Brian on the show one of these weeks to talk about Gorilla Monsoon. But yes, have not read it yet, but sounds like it should be a very good read, especially about the full story of Gorilla Monsoon that goes much beyond just being an announcer and talking about the back of the head.
That's right. and the solar plexus and things like that.
All right. We are going to wrap it up. A big thank you to Josh Nason for joining us. You can always listen to Pollock and Thurston Wednesdays at 1 Eastern, no matter what is going on in the world, construction or otherwise. We make it through the show. Sounded crystal clear on my end, Brandon.
Great.
Okay. You can follow all of our work, postwrestling.com, where I am back tonight after the Dynamite anniversary episode with Wei Ting. We will be live at postwrestlingcafe.com. And Thursday on the cafe, we'll be joined by Neil Flanagan for our latest Rewind Away. And we are reviewing the documentary selected by Neil, Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press, that came out in 2017. So we're going to be talking all about the First Amendment and its impact on the media at large. And we'll see if there's anything relevant today from a documentary that came out 8 years ago. We'll see. That's coming up Thursday. And what is happening over in WrestleNomics?
Now, my report on the shareholder lawsuit that we talked about is up there. It's actually for free for everybody on the website, as well as free subscribers on Patreon and Substack. And we will be trying to keep track of TV ratings, as always, on both Patreon and Substack.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We're back next Wednesday. That concludes Pollock and Thurston.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.